Hey friends, we wanted to take a quick minute and personally invite you to two really special gatherings coming this fall. First, our intentional motherhood retreat in Portland, Oregon, October 15th through the 17th, and then our intentional fatherhood retreat in Austin, Texas, November 12th through the 14th. Honestly, these retreats have become so much more than events for us. They've become spaces where people encounter God, experience healing, honesty, friendship, freedom, and real transformation. We live in a world that is full of information. We have podcasts, books, content, advice, but transformation requires more than information. Sometimes you need space, you need community, you need honesty, you need the presence of God, and you need to get around other people who are fighting for the same things you are. At these events, we've watched marriages soften again. We've watched fathers come out of hiding. We've watched mothers breathe deeply again. We've watched people feel seen, known, challenged, and deeply encouraged. And we would genuinely love for you to join us. You can learn more and grab tickets at intentionalparents.org. And for all things fatherhood, you can visit intentionalfatherhood.org. We hope to see you there. You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. Lori Krieg, welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast. We are honored to have you.
Brooke, thank you for having me.
I'm so sad. My better half is not here. We just had a conversation. She was supposed to be on the call and unfortunately is not feeling well today. So thank you for being willing. You're the star of the show today. So I was like, well, I can set up questions and get out of the way. So I'm just happy to have you here. And you just released a book. You have family, all of this stuff. I would just love if anyone's like listening for the first time, like Lori Krieg, why do I know that name? Where have I heard that name? Or maybe I haven't heard that name. Give us just a quick snapshot of where you are right now in the world. What life, calling, family look like?
Yep. So I'm the director of parenting and discipleship at the Center for Faith, Sexuality, and Gender, which means I'm helping parents equip their kids with a gospel vision for human sexuality. So I'm trying to help parents understand it and then give them age-appropriate language to teach their kids. So I do that through books. I do that through the Center for Faith, Sexuality, and Gender. I do that through social media. Can actually be a blessing. Yep. It's not all evil.
It's so, not.
Yeah. We got little kids. They're 12, 9, or 11, 9, and 6, almost 12. And so I have been in this field for almost 12 years. Our oldest is almost 12 years old. And so it's been very interesting understanding and equipping out there in ministry world and filtering it through my mom brain. And then teaching our kids. That's what I'm sharing with the world.
I love it. How long have you been married?
17 years.
17 years. Okay. Wonderful. So yeah, we're in that stage. Similar. Our kids are just a little bit older. We've been married just a couple of years longer, but similar. I feel the age and the stage. I see you. I see your life. I see the complexities. Yeah. Especially as they, all the school things and the, I feel it. You just wrote a book. I don't actually know the date of when it came out. Raising Wise Kids in a Sexually Broken World. I'm so pumped to talk about this today. But when did this release? I don't know the exact date.
Earlier this year. Yep. January of 26.
Wow. How has the feedback been about the book?
I mean, it's been great. And it's really fun because it's not just the book. It's been this video series that we've done. It's been parenting conferences, which as a mom, I can't hear too many things about how to talk about these things that most of us were not equipped well, and or our parents never had to navigate the things that we parents are navigating. And so I love that it's been both book and film series and conversations. It's been fun to get in the dirt and with other parents.
Well, I can't wait to get to the book because there are so many practical things. I want to talk about how we actually talk to our kids about the sexually broken world that we're in, age-appropriate stuff. We're going to get to all of that. But this isn't your first book, which is an interesting, great gift to the world. And any family and any marriage and any parenting situation starts with the foundation of marriage. And you guys actually wrote your first book called, was it Impossible Marriage?
Yep.
Yeah. And so that's where you guys have a conversation and you're so open about it, about mixed orientation marriage. And I kind of want to start there because your story is what informs so much of our work. I know that's the case for us, and I can only imagine that is the case for you. But most people hear that phrase, mixed orientation marriage, and then they immediately make assumptions. And so that's not always helpful. And so what has your marriage actually looked like in real life? And any story you want to fill in there is great.
Yeah. So when I was getting married in my mixed orientation marriage, I didn't know it had a title or a category.
Yeah, of course.
I was just getting married.
Yeah.
To my husband, Matt. But as we grew into our marriage, the language that I understood was that one of the spouse's default attractions is not toward the gender of their spouse. So one or both, really. So for me, I experience same-sex attraction. So my wrestling with sexuality, if I'm going to wrestle that way, it's going to be toward women. But I have what I call a Matt attraction, and we live in this beautiful covenant. And I'm super thankful to be married to him for 17 years, but it wasn't always gratitude. And we had 7 years in, really bumped into, I really had to wrestle down, why does God put two different things together and say, this is the best picture of my love for the world? Because I was really wrestling 7 years in with a suppressed memory of childhood trauma resurfaced when one of my kids turned the age I was and something happened to me. And it magnetized to these attractions to the same sex that I had been happily surrendering to the Lordship of Christ before then. And it produced this question of, what do you want? And 7 years in, I was like, that's a really good question.
Yes.
Why am I here? And I would look at most marriage books and podcasts and conferences, and a lot of them made fun of the fact that God puts two different things together, man and wife, husband and wife. And they were like, yeah, isn't it hilarious that like before you get married, all you want to do is like have sex. And then you get married, and in order to make sex Christian legal, you get married, but surprise, you're in a covenant and God hates divorce. So good luck, Chuck.
Oh, you point out so many conundrums. Keep going though. Yes.
So here I was, default attractions toward the same sex, and the language in Christian circles was like, yeah, isn't this a big cosmic joke or cosmic punishment? Oh, I mean, JK, God just wants to make you holy and sanctified. And I was like, oh, I want to get, I'll get sanctified somewhere else. Like, if this is a big joke, God's just laughing at us. And then I read Francis and Lisa Chan's marriage book. Have you read that one? You and Me Forever?
Yeah.
Which is basically like the gospel with like a few marriage sentences in between, which I needed.
Yeah.
Because in there, they unpack Ephesians 5:32, and the Holy Spirit illuminated those verses for me. And that was one of the first marriage books I did not throw across the room. I read it, and how they unpacked it was like, wait a minute. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This is a profound mystery. What's the profound mystery? That husband and wife get married, that men and women fall in love. What a wonderful mystery. Let's turn it into a Hallmark movie. No. He says, I'm talking about Christ and the church. I was like, hold up. God didn't put Matt and I together to just laugh at us. Be like, figure that out, suckers. It's husband and wife in the very act of becoming one and seeking union through the promise of the covenant. We are showing the world a small picture of how Jesus died and covenanted to dusty old, made from dust us. And that he is the ultimate different. How different is God from the church? He's far above every ruler, power, and authority. And so when Matt and I love each other, even the act of going to counseling, even the act of saying, I choose you, yes, Matt, is not a joke. It's me saying to my kids and neighbors and strangers in the grocery store, here's a small picture of how Jesus died to be one with you.
Mm. Yes.
I could not get behind you. Oh, you just, you just have fun being in this covenant. But to say through this seeking union, not even the finding union, the seeking union, I am showing the world a picture of Jesus' love. That was the engine to get me into therapy.
Yes.
Oh. To preach the gospel through our marriage was the engine to get us help. And here we are 10 years after that, 17 years in.
Wow. I really appreciate you being honest. I don't know you outside of today, but I'm really grateful for your sincerity, really grateful for your transparency. It's a very shared value for Elizabeth and I. Also on this podcast, if anyone that listens knows, there's just no time for it. I don't have any time to pretend and to sugarcoat. It's like, listen, this is real and it's hard. And so I just appreciate not only the vulnerability, but the honesty, because it is so complex. Marriage is so complex. Even what you would call a good marriage or healthy marriage has so many layers and complexities. And most of the time it is hard fought to get to a place of health. And it is really challenging. And so with that, well, thank you for kind of setting that foundation. I'd be curious for you, how did that personal, and you kind of mentioned it, how did that personal story shape the way you're parenting and discipling your kids around sexuality and identity?
That's such a great question. So when my oldest daughter was 3, I was cleaning the bathroom and she's looking at a search and find. Her little 1-year-old sister is downstairs and there must have been a bride and a groom on this like little search and find, like trying to find stuff. And she looked up at me. So I'm finally cleaning the toilet and she's like, Mom, can 2 girls get married? And I was like, what now? Like, is this when we talk about same-sex marriage at 3 while I'm cleaning the bathroom? But in that season, Matt and I were going through our tumult. We were working through, and I was starting to understand God puts 2 different things together to show the world a picture of how different he is from us, and yet he wants union with us. So I was like, what if I say that and little kids speak, Lori? So I tried it. I said, yes, Gwen. 2 in our country is legal for girls to get married. Our government lets it. Which that's always my thing. I'm always like, answer the question or explain what is going on. Whenever my kids ask me something or I see something in the world, I'm like, Lori, your job as a parent is to interpret the world for your kids. This world's bananas. Do this in age-appropriate ways. What is going on? Then why? Why is it not God's good design? And then 3rd is talk about how do we love, but sometimes we don't have time for all 3. So it's like, 2 girls can get married. Burp, burp, burp. Why is it not God's good design? Not just the no. What's the yes? Why do I do the yes? Because when we only teach out of first of all, the Bible doesn't start with Act 2 of the gospel of the no. He starts with the yes. Also, when we speak to the yes, our brains calm down. When we talk about the positive, and also when we teach with a why, it's authoritative parenting. When we teach the why, our kids actually follow the rules better. So going to the why of God's good design, hey, it's not, yes, 2 girls can, but it's not God's design. Why? God wants marriage to be between a mommy and a daddy because mommies and daddies are different. He wants it to be between 2 people whose bodies are different. Literally, I'm learning that in real time in my own marriage at that moment. 2 people whose bodies are different because when mommies and daddies love each other, even though they're so different, they show you a picture of how much God loves you, even though he is so different from us. Okay. Yeah. Runs off.
Yes. That script is so, like, please, everyone, just take it. I think it was 1:30. Just 3 clicks of that 30-second back button. Listen to that again. Write that script down. Yes. I mean, what you had just said about interpreting the world for our kids, this is such an important detail that I think is easy to miss, especially if you weren't raised with it. I mean, this was not the way I was raised, right?
Right.
So like I had no, even understanding, like, I'm supposed to explain the world to my kids? Like, what?
Right.
Yeah. And so knowing, like, A, and then we'll just say this. So if you're hearing this, you need to have this conversation. It is your responsibility. But what you just did beautifully in a minute is to show it's actually not that much more complex. It's not even that much more time. It is simply just being very specific and clear. And the thing that, I'll just say this, I no doubt know you'll agree, but the narrative void situation is really tricky, that when we don't fill in what's going on in our kids' lives or through different situations and don't make sense of it, there's usually a narrative void that opens.
Yep.
And what happens is our kids often fill that narrative void with, well, it's because of me. It's because I'm the problem.
Yep.
And so if you don't jump in and rescue them from their own psyche and self, like with these types of scripts, and say, well, here's what is real. It saves them from just worlds of pain, even towards themselves. And so saying all that to say, you're encapsulating so many beautiful things with even that line of thinking, not only line of thinking, but that phrase. I'd be curious, like, now with those conversations, that's 3 years old, which is, again, I'm sure there's so many other stories, but what do you think Christian parents, and we're going to talk about Christian parents because I think there's a different goal with Christian parents.
Yeah.
But what do you think Christian parents specifically avoid because they're afraid, uncomfortable, or unprepared? What types of conversations do you think they're avoiding?
I think anything we don't understand.
Hmm.
However, I don't know if we're always only avoiding. I think when we encounter things we don't understand, I think what I'm seeing is we do a trauma response of fight, flight, freeze, fawn, which is people please. So we keep bumping into different versions of the world's brokenness. Like, we invent new ways to be depraved every single day. It's so great. And so then we as parents, like, how many more reels do I have to watch? How much more do I have to educate myself? And then what do I have to keep my kids from? And we are full-blown trauma. Like, we are fight, flight, freeze, fawn. And so some of us are freezing. Some of us are fawning. We're like, okay, whatever. I'll just do whatever you want, kids. Some of us are fighting and it's all caps online. Mm. And then some of us are just freaking out. It's really, I think we're really hurting.
Can you tell me a little more about what that might look like? Because dysregulation, fight, flight, freeze, you know, fawn, the whole thing. Very, very personal experience for me, our family. I come from a whole line of dysregulation, but came into adulthood with just an insane amount of what I would call what seemed normal to me, but everyone around me that did not have a dysregulated nervous system, and everyone's at least was more regulated than I was, kind of was giving me this active feedback, like, you're nuts. And so let's talk about how that might show up. What does that look like in parenting? And again, this can be obviously your perspective, but how does that look? Because when we don't understand, yes, I get all those things, but tell me more about what that dysregulated response looks like in the home, and especially around things we fear or don't know.
I mean, I can think of a couple, and I'm sure we can think of more together, but, you know, same-sex couple comes on the show. You're watching a TV show.
There you go.
And you're, as a parent, you're either, okay, we're not going to say anything, or you're like, what? This world's going to hell in a handbasket. Like, raging. And you didn't know your teenager was struggling with same-sex attractions and was thinking about talking to you that night. But now that you just raged about that on that screen, now they just are like, oh, okay, well, dad's not safe to talk to because he's freaking out about them. And dad may even did, oh, well, I wouldn't freak out about my son. You just gave him, you out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. And you just did a raw, unadulterated reaction to whatever was on the screen, which parents will tell me, Lori, I am so mad. To which I say, we got to follow the psalmist. Where do we take our unfiltered, raw rage about the brokenness of the world? To God. Go there so you don't bleed on your kid. So that's one spot.
Yeah.
Or your kid finds porn, freaking out. Go, implode, explode. Or your kid, the rainbow flags. I mean, when June comes along, it turns, a lot of places turn rainbow, or someone looks at your kid sideways. someone hurts your kid. Like, there's so many ways for us to react, either too much or too little.
Now, with your particular story, and again, we don't have to go into the details, but I know that because of my upbringing, it made me hyper aware of everybody around my kids, you know, like it, and in many ways has made me very aware of all the different potential pain points that kids could suffer at the hands of others, whether that's sexually or physical abuse or, you know, the list goes on. From your story, you know, has that helped you be more aware, or has it actually in some ways handicapped you and made you is it too much? You're like, where's that line for us? Because you know what I mean? It's just hard to know. And I might be poking on something here, but this is a very personal question.
Yeah.
I'm just curious your thoughts about that.
So we're going to transmit that which we don't transform with God.
Yep. Yeah.
So what you're doing, what you have done, what are you in your story processing, and me too, like my own trauma, my own wrestling with same-sex attraction to my husband. I hate to say this is classic, but you know, part of our story is his porn addiction from age 10 to 30, like holy cat. So we got it all. As disciple makers, not just parents, even disciple makers, the next generation and parents, we have to take our story and bring it to the Lord and to healthy helpers who can help us ask questions. Otherwise, we are going to pass along to the next generation either a repeat or a reaction to. So, but either way, our story is the driver, not necessarily the gospel. Like, even if you're like, oh no, my whole childhood was like 100% gospel. Sure about that? You had imperfect parents. Like, so we have to take it to the Lord and like let him and his healthy helpers dissect it so that what we pass on is at least a little farther than what we received. And hopefully our kids do the next thing to their kids or the people they disciple. So I would say in my story, gosh, I have to extra be sensitive to any real thing about abuse because I am extra wounded there. And so those are places where I need like five more people to look at what I post and what I say to be like, is this just a reaction or a repetition? Help me.
Yeah. Thank you for being honest. Yeah. It is really hard to find the middle. It's hard to find like, where's the healthy part to where I'm not operating out of wounding, but there's redemption and you want to do it different, but you don't want to, you know, the pendulum just always wants to go so far to the other side. And so it's just always hard when you've never done this before. Like, I've never been married for 20 years until now. I've never been had kids, four kids and one with special needs till now. And like, I'm just learning constantly with my own kids. I'm like, with my son 17 next month, I'm like, bro, I've never had a 17-year-old son. I'm just figuring this out with you right now. So like, let's have some patience. But I think that's kind of something we have to apply even to our stories, even as you're sharing, like there's a overprotection that naturally happens. Like as a parent, I mean, we are protective, but when you're wounded or when there's abuse in your past or anything, we often will overdo a lot of that, which can also do its own damage. You know,
I know.
Very tricky. So where anything that you do, and again, this could be as simple as you maybe just said it, but like I send my post to people, what are just some practical things that you do to help even just like bring in permission for balance? You know, like what are some of those practices, ideas, thoughts? I'd love to hear that.
About protecting our kids specifically?
About you not swinging the pendulum all the way to the side. Is it prayer? Is it making sure other people have voice into it so that you're not just responding out of fear of future abuse and being a balanced human? Like, I need people like my wife as an example to help me say, like, you're kind of overdoing it here. Like, I think this is out of fear, not actual care for our kids. What are some practices or what does that look like between you and your husband or friends?
Yeah, I think that's a huge one. What you just said is, are we saying things out of fear or is it out of love? Am I posting this thing out of fear or love? And I need other people to ask me those questions, especially in places where I'm still in process. especially there, which maybe like need to say nothing, like in extra process where it's like the wound is still bleeding. It's not even like scabbed over or scar yet. Like before you say anything, ask three more people. And they can ask you that because they can be like, no, it's definitely out of love. It's like only righteous anger and only love. So just make sure those people are asking those questions before you post, before you write something, before you, as you're talking to your kids about things. Like that's where real life happens is the before bed and everybody's tired. And then your kid brings up a huge topic. But
it's always before bed.
Always. I literally last night, I'm like, Jesus, help me, give me strength. It's every night we need to do that. But
I wonder though, if it's because in our weakness, God's stronger and we know we're at our physical weakness. So he's like, I can actually speak to you better tonight in your almost out of it there. Yeah,
probably. But then too, like, you know, I can think of scenarios where let's say you are exhausted and you say something and you walk away and you're like, was that crazy? Just know, like, before you go to beat up yourself, go talk to your spouse, go talk to a friend, whomever, and then just remember, repair matters more than perfection. I have been using this phrase. I stole this from my older sister, Renee, and the phrase is, I wish I had. So I did something. I messed up. I yelled at him. I reacted too big or too small. I totally pendulumed. I didn't even see it. And let's say my husband saw it. I'm like, great. This happened actually this week. I hurt one of my kids. Didn't even realize it. And I go up to her and I bring up the situation. And then it's like, so you're bringing it up, which activates our brains. We start activating. And then I say, I wish I had, you know, Juliet, this is how I reacted. And you just see them be like, whatever their version of response is. And then you go, you know what I wish I would have done? I wish I would have just said, just listened. I wish I would have asked one more question. I wish I would have, whatever. So that helps me as a mom, like especially maybe as intentional parents, is like, we want to get it right. But truly, like, it's about trying and then modeling for them even how to fail.
We want to let you know about a new offering, a 31-day prayer devotional entitled Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. This book was born out of desperation. I didn't know how to lead my kids spiritually, so I started praying honest, dependent, daily prayers. Jeremiah 29:12 says, "Then you will call on me, God says, and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you." If you want to learn more, head to intentionalparents.org. And if you partner with us at $25 a month or more, we'd love to send you a copy as a thank you.
The backside weakness of wanting to be an intentional parent is shame and not being very gracious with yourself in the process, right?
100%.
And so it's like the world that we want to speak to, especially here at Intentional. It's like, well, it's a type of person who's probably not going to always be as gracious as they need to be on themselves and others, because you're right. It isn't perfection. The 80-20 rule when it comes to life and parenting and a lot of things is very important. And it's an important detail. You know, you kind of mentioned bedtime. You mentioned the reality of kids asking hard questions. When a child, and they will, and they've already done it probably, but when a child actually asks hard questions, and they're going to, but specifically around sexuality and identity, I would love to know what a healthy response looks like. Even like, what is a script that you would use or that you maybe have used with your kids when they have hard questions about sexuality, sexual identity? What should that look like?
Immediately, the first thing that always comes to mind is, hey, thanks so much for asking that. Like, it's usually a thank you, because it takes courage on the part of a kid. And if we put ourselves in their shoes, it, like, remember being 9, 10, 11, 12, teenage, it is really stressful to ask questions. And then honestly, you don't even know how stressful it is until your parent starts reacting and they look stressed, which studies show your kid is going to be more chill if you're more chill. So just go to, thank you for asking that. That's a really good question. And then if you don't know the answer, I don't know is acceptable. You know what? I don't know, buddy. I'm going to find out that answer and I'll get back to you. If it's 10 p.m. and they're 10 years old, it's not going to be that night. But you do need to circle back. But in general, what I'm trying to think through as I respond to questions, as I alluded to this earlier, when my kids ask me hard stuff about sexuality, it's what, why, how, what is going on? Like, so whatever they're asking, mom, what is porn? Mom, why did this kid say this thing to me? Why did this, you know, my girls were talking about boys objectifying women at school, girls, just talking about them. My daughter's 9. I was like, oh, okay, this is super.
So bummer. Yes.
What is going on? Hey, you know what? I bet maybe he didn't see. He saw some stuff that he shouldn't have seen. And sadly that is affecting his brain so that now he's looking at women. He's looking at them like an object. Do you know what? I said, do you know what objectification is? No, she does not.
Yeah.
I said, it's looking at a person like an object. And I'm so sorry. How are you feeling about that? All the research is like the more back and forth you can be with your kids when it comes to sexuality, the better it is. They want to have a say, to let them have questions. What did you think about that? When one of my daughters said this situation, she was like, I feel terrible. Like, I don't feel good at all. And so I'm like, I'm so sorry. I'm going to tune to our emotions. That was the conversation for that night. But the next day, we talked about it. We brought it back up. I was like, hey, let's go around. Let's talk about objectification. Because I am, as the mom, it is my J-O-B to interpret the world for them. Hey, would you be okay sharing that story? She shares the story. Hey, here's the what. Why is it not God's good design? How are we going to walk in this world? How are we going to love people? How are we going to walk? What happened? Yeah. She shared it. You know what? That's called objectification. When a boy or a girl treats you like an object instead of a whole person. Mm-hmm. Why is that not God's design, guys? Well, mom, we're supposed to really honor each other. We're supposed to love each other as mind, heart, body. That's right. Now, how are we going to live in a world where people do this? That's a great conversation.
Yes, it is. And it's not for the faint of heart, you know, because kids, each kid especially, and this needs to be noted, and I'm sure this is your experience, but each kid is different. So how they receive or even are open about talking about any of these
things
varies per kid.
That's right.
And so just even that idea that one size fits all, I think there is a generalized, what I hear you saying, just to maybe interpret a little bit, is I hear you saying that unique detail of like, here's the big idea, but you have to nuance with each kid how to apply that. But I do love the structure that you're highlighting just as a principle of what's going on in the world. So it's what, and then what,
why then is it not God's design?
Why is it not God's design? And then what's the last one?
How shall we then live?
There you go. And that's so helpful because that spans every personality type, every level of comfort, you know, around sexuality. Some kids especially are just like, they can't even deal. I mean, I don't know what it's like with you and your husband, but any amount of affection I show my wife, they're like, this is disgusting, you know? And we have an open culture as far as like conversational culture around sexuality in our home. And it is so funny how they're just like, we can't, this is gross.
I'm
like,
know. Listen,
kids, the fact that we show affection is actually healthy for you, even though you don't like it.
Like, I know.
But anyway, there's different temperaments and that script, I love that. Take that, apply it, keep doing it. I mean, I'm just continue to think, even with our own kids, like I want to take that and continue to apply it. We do a version of that, but what you're talking about is just so much clearer. And I think following the same framework, and I'd actually be curious, it's kind of a question, but also maybe an observation that you can confirm or deny. When you use that framework consistently, they then have a framework to just start looking through the world. Yeah. And I would imagine they start just going like, what's going on? You know, why is that happening? What, you know, is that true? Would you say it's true?
I mean, I always tell people, ask my kids in 10 years, like how this went. So I have a no guarantee system, but I am starting to see this with the 11, almost 12 year old. Is she just like, well, he must really be hurting, huh? Oh, he's really struggling with that inside. And I'm like, yeah, he probably is.
Oh my gosh. I remember the time when I realized how hard it is to raise emotionally aware kids and give them permission to say what they think. I was like, this is a story for another time. But I remember it's like, you both want that. And then you're like, I've given you too much language to evaluate my skills or lack thereof when it comes to parenting.
Oh yeah. The worst is when it's like parenting feedback night, you know, not that there are nights, but they're like, yeah, I'm like, how am I doing? They're like, oh, we got words. We have ideas how you could do better.
Oh, recently it was funny. Just real life story. Like the kids will be like, they'll go to my wife, my older kids be like, dad seems to be having a hard day. Like,
I love it though. It's so emotionally safe. I love it.
And I'm like, you guys know that I can hear you, and you know that you also know like I'm okay with you telling me this. And yes, it is. I am off today. Yes, you know, it's kind of like the combination of things.
I'm proud of you and hurting.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but isn't that life? I think to lie to them about it would be unfair. I want to know, you know, because this is the typical thing, and I'll say as a person who has an easily activated nervous system. Responding bigly, in a big way,
yeah,
quickly, is something that I am always having to just kind of try to get in front of, because it's like I hear the thing and my body reacts before I'm even present to all the details of what I'm reacting to. And it is terribly problematic and it's taken years to even understand how to get in front of it. That said, though, there's so much damage that can be done there. In the first response. And so my question is, what do we accidentally communicate when we panic or shut down or overrespond or overreact when our kids do tell us or are curious about their identity or sexuality? What do we communicate?
Yeah. I mean, this is so hard because this is where all of us parents who are like on the edge of our seat, they're like, help me not damage my kids.
Yeah.
And like, me too. Like, yeah. I feel that as well.
Yes.
And the fact of the matter is you will hurt them. It is just true. And it's so hard for me to research. I like started following this person who does all the like, when you're activated, your kids are activated. If you respond badly, they're going to feel unsafe. And you're like, I have to hyper manage my every eyebrow move. And it can, it feels terrible. So I would say, it really stinks our kids have mirror neurons that we do something and we're anxious and we're activated and then they feel what we feel. And their like sense of okay is based on us. That to me is so hard. So when we react bigly, when they tell us things, they're going to go to shame. They're going to go to self-hatred. They're going to go to a place of, oh no, am I not okay? So this is why, like, as parents, I did read this recently, is we're not just modeling perfectionism, we're modeling them how to deal with their big emotions. So if you need to say, oh, I feel myself feeling really activated right now, or whatever your household language is, I need a couple minutes. I'll be back. 1 second. I love you so much. Look them in the eye, grab them by the shoulders. I'll be right back. So when we back up and take a couple minutes and come back, or 5 minutes or whatever it is, that's going to help them calm down. So the hard thing is it does activate them. They can go to shame. But the good news is when you model stepping back and taking a beat and coming back, you're teaching them what to do in their big emotions, because they're not going to be able to hypermanage their every eyebrow and their every sigh and their every reaction either. And so if you can be like, 1 second, or if you explode, I am so sorry. I wish I wouldn't have done that. I wish I had said this and this and this. You're going to watch your kids calm down, and they're going to be able to enter the conversation again and know how to live with themselves in the future with their imperfect selves.
Oh, that is the bigger thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
As you're talking about it, the bigger thing of teaching our kids how to be okay with not being okay.
Yes.
Now, but also in the future.
Yes.
I resonate so much with what you're saying, because I feel like the biggest disservice, and I'm sure I'd love to take off the interview hat for a second and just have an honest chat even for a second about when you do work in the family space, there's this assumption that you're doing that work because you figured something out.
Yeah.
or that you have something dialed.
Yeah.
Or that, you know, you're not dealing with all the same things that everyone else is.
Right.
And I will say the journeys are different. What you decide to educate yourself with is different. Your story is different. Your calling. There's a myriad of things that make up a person's ministry and you know, all of that. But to say, like, it's really hard doing a lot of this work in the sense of family and parenting, because most of the time I don't find myself saying, yeah, do more. I find myself just saying, just with my own kids, myself and others, just chill out. You're not perfect. You're never going to be. This idea that because now that we know where information has just killed us, in my opinion, is like now we just know too much to be socially regulated in our own bodies. Like we just know too much. And knowing like that our kids have mirror neurons, like I don't know if that's ever helpful. I don't know if I'd ever need to know that.
I know.
Because now I know that and now I'm stressed about that. And, you know, and so anyway, I just to maybe say like this work is hard because it isn't, you know, and I can hear your heart and your study and your education. Obviously you're doing beautiful work. You're writing, you guys are doing good things to help, but it is not because, and I hear this from your own story and I know this to be so true. It is not because you've figured something out and don't struggle. It is, in fact, I think because of the struggle that you want to help other people. How fair is that to you? And please, any response that you have.
I mean, sister to brother. Like,
yeah.
I don't know if you find this, but it's like you want to step into this space. Have fun. Here's some suffering, my friend.
Yes.
You really going to preach that, Brooke? Guess what? You get to learn more and extra. And that's not God's actual heart toward us. But he's like, I think if he's entrusting this platform to you, my friend, he's entrusting suffering to you, my friend, because he wants us to not just be mouths. He wants us to be Imago Dei. He wants us to bear it and live it. And that means we have to have the muscles, which means we suffer to get muscles.
Yes.
So, sister to brother, I see you. And there's, we are actively in our family. Yeah. Oh, my word. The amount of daily calling on Jesus for suffering the Lord entrusts to us that we don't share on stages, that we get to learn the muscles. So then, we can share the fruit from God through mouths that haven't just learned it, but lives that have lived it. Yes. So I see you, homie.
Yeah. I really appreciate you saying that. It is so true. You know, some people, I remember for a long time when I was thinking about stepping in, I wasn't even thinking about stepping into this work. I was a pastor before this for a lot of years, and it was never something I chased after or wanted. And this comes back to the next question I want to ask you, but it's so interesting to me because there is a level of qualifications that I felt like, well, I need to get this level of education and I need to do this. You know, you go through the things of like, here's what I need to feel validated to do the work.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget I was on the phone with my therapist. I'm processing this with him. He's really gracious. He's 75, 76 now, somewhere around there. And he's just like, he's listening graciously. And I had said to him, I was like, well, so I'm struggling. I'm just like, you know, that whole imposter syndrome. I have no idea why anyone would even care. And he goes, because I was talking about going back to school. And he's like, well, let me just ask you a question. And I was like, okay. And he goes, are people listening to what you're saying? And I was like, well, yeah, but I mean, that's not the point. He's like, well, is it helping them? I was like, well, I mean, they'll say, yeah, but it's not what it's about. He's like, well, sounds like God's using you. And I was like,
yes.
I was like, but that's not enough. You know, I needed my list. And at the end of the day, why I'm saying all that is to say, I think there is a school of education. There's a school of suffering. There's a school of anointing. There's a school of, and I'm not claiming anointing as much as I'm claiming like the suffering piece is our school. That is our school for my life, for my wife, for myself, for our family, for our story.
Yep.
Sounds similar in some sense to you.
Oh yeah.
And to bring it back to the pain in the story and the, you know, what qualifies us to say anything. And that's honestly Jesus in many ways, but what pain in your own story, and you kind of mentioned, but I'd love to know what pain in your own story kind of came the catalyst for this book to want to write this, to want to help other people.
For the Raising Wise Kids book.
Yeah.
The pain point was like, Brooke, what the heck, man? We grow up in 80s and 90s, evangelical mm-hmm. America.
Yeah.
We hear all the purity culture. We Ooh. All go through it. We go through it. Or if you didn't grow up in the church, you get at best thrown like a condom at you and like mm-hmm. said, don't have sex or you'll get chlamydia and die or mm-hmm. something. Shout out Mean Girls.
Yeah. So, yes. Yes.
But purity culture, you know, I'm not going to do a huge rip into it, but it was very, the one critique, mm-hmm. major critique is it was you do good, you get good. You do bad, you mm-hmm. get bad. And it was all focused on marriage. And it was basically karma. Mm-hmm. Same with the liberal side. It's like you do bad, you get bad. So here we are still having babies in 2020 and beyond. And so we have human children. We go through purity culture. We rip it up for the last decades. We rip up, don't just throw condoms at them. But who's saying anything? What are we saying? What are we supposed to teach our children in a sexually broken world? There's this huge void that you alluded to. And so that was the pain point for me is, are we allowed to talk? And what can we say? And dear Jesus Christ in heaven, don't let me be the next purity culture. Help us to be gospel-centered. So that was the pain point. But I mean, then you, sometimes the pain starts the ministry and sometimes it comes as you're doing it. So that's the furnace of suffering that God's like, let's go, buddy.
Yeah. Wow. I want to say thank you. Thank you for being transparent. Thank you for being vulnerable. Thank you for not being a voice in this world that has waited until life has subsided to a way that you can just talk about it in hindsight. But the fact that you go back home tonight to the same complexities, just, you know, it helps knowing, you know, for me and many listening, like you have to be in this grind with all of us. And thank you for writing this. Anybody that's listening to this, go get this book, the scripts, the gospel centeredness. Even if you're like, do I understand the gospel? Like, you guys do an incredible job of even setting up and highlighting and understanding what the gospel is and how that applies to all of these facets of life, but especially with your kids. And this is a resource as much as it's a education, it's a resource, and we need resources as families and trusted ones. And so just thank you to you and your husband for doing the work and for taking the time and the energy and staying in the furnace. You know, Elizabeth and I started marriage counseling 2 weeks ago again, and it was like,
love it.
Yeah. And I just think we'll always have a version, like we'll always be in and out of stuff because life is so complicated. Even our therapist yesterday goes, it's really surprising. Like, you guys understand how crazy it is that you're not divorced. We're like, that's actually nice to hear. Like, thank you. Like, thank you for that. Like, with what life is thrown at you, it's pretty rare that, and honestly, I don't know how people receive that. I received it as great news. I was like, that's great.
Yes.
I mean, it just proves like, there is a lot of hard things, but we're willing to actually go at it. And so happy. And for your example, and your husband's example to go after it. One final question.
Yeah.
I just ask you one more
thing. Go to town.
What, and this is like dealer's choice, free for all. You get to decide. As a person in this world and in the work you do, you're learning all the time. It's part of the thing you need to do. And obviously I can easily tell you from our conversation, you're a learner and you love learning. What is just something right now, and again, on topic or off, that has just been really helpful? What's one thing you're learning that you're like, this has been really helpful recently?
High quality rest is vital.
Say more about this.
You know, we alluded to last night where I was like, I just had to stop before I went down to talk to my third kid, you know, for how long is this bedtime going to be?
Yep.
Often we'll stop and grab our phone, which this isn't going to be a phone rant, but it's not a phone rant. But we just like, it's like a little pixie stick for our brains. And you get like this little high of dopamine as you look at your phone and then you go see your kids and then they ask you these intense questions and you're like still thinking about whatever was on your phone and you actually didn't sigh in Jesus. And you meditate 20 seconds to think about how much he loves you. It just, and sees you in the grind. And then take that 20 seconds with you instead of a 20-second pixie stick dopamine hit from your phone, and you go to your kids, that's a different brain and heart. That's what I'm calling high quality rest. I want the top shelf rest lately in little bursts, because I'm a real life mom working and momming. And so that's what I'm seeking. That's something that I'm just learning with the Holy Spirit right now is, Lori, get that type A1 high quality rest, so that you can not only love your kids, but remember what a treasure you are too. Hey, you're a sheep in need of a shepherd too. Just hang out with him.
Final question of that question, just as what is just one or two practical things that you've, and I'm looking for practical here, like what's one or two practical things that have helped you to that goal?
Oh yeah. Okay. Ready. Before bed. My phone is not in our room. It is in our little phone station. It's plugged in. It does not come upstairs with us to our room. And every single night I've been doing this for about 2 or 3 years now. I lay down on my back after I do like some push-ups and stuff. Then I lay down and I lay on my little neck pillow and I think through my day and I ask myself I do this 4 things. I think about 4 corners of the room, and to the right is, how did I get glory today that I didn't give glory to God? And I just give it back to him. I like breathe it out. Other side of the room, how did I suck in shame that I'm holding on to where I failed, and how do I need to breathe it out to the Lord right now? God, you took my sin and shame. And then toward my feet, the floor is, what am I anxious about? I need to surrender to Jesus right now. And then the top, the last part of the wall, my head is, what am I thankful for? And I just sit and think about God's love for me. And then I read a book, go to bed. And I've just got, that's high quality sleep.
Yeah.
It's changed my whole night.
Wow. Well, which has changed, I could imagine it changes even your sleep, right?
Oh, like yeah. My whole sleep for sure. 100%.
Yeah. Amazing. Lori, thank you. Could not be more happy with this conversation. Grateful for this conversation. Grateful for the work you're doing. And grateful for the fact that you said yes to this. You could have said no. Oh. You could have, I mean, honestly, and in one sense, I know that feeling, like, I don't know if I actually could have, because I feel like I'm made to do this. I know that tension. But at the same time, you know, you could have said no. And I'm really grateful you didn't, and grateful to you and your husband for the work you're doing. Anybody listening to this, go follow all the stuff you're doing, and we'll have that stuff in the show notes. But get this book. Please get this book.
Thank
It'll be really fun.
Thank you, Brooke. You guys are awesome. So thankful to cheer you on this side too.